Hey everyone, this is Season 3, Episode 1 of Guards of Eden. Today's guest is Megan Airy. Before I talk about the episode, however, I want to wish everyone happiness and health at this time where the world's in somewhat of a disarray, and I appreciate that it's times of anxiety and fear, for some loneliness as well, and I just want to wish you guys nothing but good energy and love across your way, because I know this, it can be quite a scary time right now, so I hope that Guards of Eden can help in some way as that journey, as this, we try and figure this out as a society and as a global community, as it were. But as I said, today's guest, Megan Airy, some of you may know her better as Megan Nicola through the work that she does and her coaching work. She's also the artist of the artwork that you're seeing right now, and something that I'm extremely appreciative of and very grateful that Megan managed to work that out. I met Megs about 2 weeks before we recorded the episode, and her energy was just so warm and inviting, and I just loved sitting down with her, and it felt like a perfect fit straight away in terms of Guards of Eden and sharing her story and, you know, what I've built this platform upon. So extremely grateful that that was the case. And Meg's story starts out in Zimbabwe. She's moved a lot as a kid, and you hear that in the story. But I think that it's this mixture of this peaceful, calm energy, but a resilience and a will to overcome adversity, that it just makes the story so unique and something I'm so proud to share. Meg's just has this phenomenal energy. I'm so proud of what the episode ended up being. For those of you that may be wondering why I've waited as long as I have for the episode to release today, which is March 31st, is that it actually represents a year passing of an artist that I love in Nipsey Hussle. And a phrase that he made famous for his work is, "The marathon continues." And I think it's something that, it's a sentiment that definitely our society needs right now, in terms of the inner determination to overcome, as well as just a fight to overcome as well. So it was important I kind of celebrated a day that really an artist that I admire just wholeheartedly for what he achieved in his short time here on Earth. So rest in paradise for Nipsey Hussle. And I can't wait for you guys to hear this. So without further ado, 3, 2, 1, the marathon continues.
Hey Megs, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm really good. Thank you for welcoming me into your abode. I love it.
It's very cozy. I think it's, yeah, a nice little studio place, if you can call it that. Got the fairy lights.
It's very you.
Yeah, I think it is. Fairly minimalistic, I'd say.
And welcoming.
But yes, that is the, I like that, yeah. Nice and warm and, yeah, inviting.
Yeah, which I think you've done a great job.
Thank you.
Right, question number one. This is a question I ask everyone as of season two, but now of season three. Can you give me a song that reminds you of a happy time in your life or a good memory?
I love this. There are a few, but the main one that sticks out is Nina Simone, Feeling Ooh. Good. Ooh. Yeah, every time I hear it, I'm always like, it takes me back to my childhood. My parents used to play it, you know, on full blast, maybe at the weekend. And it just always reminds me of cherished family time.
I love it. Yeah,
and it's such a feel-good song as well.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Oh, so that's going to live on the Guards of Eden soundtrack,
Yay.
Which is Spotify playlist. Yeah, and you're the first of season three.
I'm very, very happy to be here.
Yeah. Right. Life began for Megs in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember much from that time?
So I left before I was, just before I was five.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember growing up, I remember, so, a little bit cringe, but at primary school, preschool, winning the Kindness Cup Award when I was four. Yeah, I remember getting that. So there's like little hints of like childhood memories. I always remember it as being a very much just a fun time.
Mm.
I wish I'd had longer there. I really wish I'd, been able to establish more roots. But it is what it is. And the country was already... I mean, we left when my little sister, I think she was about 3 months old, 6 months old. And my parents were just like, nah, we've got to get out of here. It's not looking good. So we moved to the UK. But,
And then whereabouts in the UK did you end up moving?
So we started in Essex. We were in Rittle. Yeah. But my parents weren't that happy. I was getting to the age where I was starting to pick up an Essex accent. And I don't think my parents were that happy. Aww. And I was starting to... I mean, I was... How old was I? I was like 9, I think. And I was starting to, you know... want to wear makeup and all this kind of stuff. So my parents were like, we need to get out of here ASAP. So we then moved to the Isle of Wight. And I loved the Isle of Wight. We were much more... everything was so safe. Like, I remember my parents not even locking the front door. Car doors weren't locked. I just remember playing outside all the time with my friends, playing on our bikes and, like, having a real childhood. And I think that's something... that potentially in the UK, I feel like kids grow up quite quickly. So it was really nice to have that freedom again. And we were on the Isle of Wight, for just under 5 years. And then we moved back to Africa again.
Yeah. How was it to move so much as a kid?
I don't know. I think it has its pros and cons. Like by the time I was 15, I'd been to 9 or 10 different schools.
Wow.
So it made me really good at adapting. I think I've always naturally been a good communicator and I've always luckily made friends really easily, but that put it onto just another level. But I do often envy like friends who are still in touch with, you know, people they went to preschool with or primary school with. And as much as I have contact with my friends who are all over the world, they're not necessarily in my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And we moved obviously homes a lot, so I don't really, I think the place I would consider home was our last home in Malawi, which we now don't have because my dad's moved here now.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that, I kind of, you know, my boyfriend's been in the same house since he was, you know, really young, and I just, oh, that's so nice. And so it was pros and cons. There's always, everything in balance.
So you... I read the blog that gave me quite a good summary of, like, I guess, just your, you know, where you were located at different ages and everything. And you used the Mean Girls meme about why are you white? Because you're born in Africa.
Yeah.
So, mum and dad, where were they, like, kind of born and raised somewhat to find each other?
So, my mum was born in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
My biological dad was born in South Africa. My stepdad was born in the UK, but moved to Africa when he was, I guess, 10 or 12. And they met through work. But my grandparents, I think my gran is, because I've got 3 sets of family now.
Yeah.
So all of my grandparents are all moved to Africa or were born there.
Uh-huh.
So I've got quite a few generations of African within my family, some German, some French. So a little bit of a mix. So I always like, you know, I'm really proud to be African. I really, really am. It sometimes, it always shocks people when I say where I'm from. Like you just wouldn't guess. But I think that's, something quite unique and something that I'm really proud to have as my heritage.
Yeah, because you're... I had watched a couple of like IGTV stuff before we met properly. And then your accent, that's the thing. Because you spent that, like you spent some portion in South Africa. I was like, maybe, I just couldn't pick up your accent. Yeah. Do you get people that are like, where are you from? Because your accent's not British. It's not like typical of a country that I've heard anyway, but.
It's very mixed. It comes out really strongly when I've had a few to drink.
Yeah.
And when I say certain phrases, so like if I say here, I say here, I say just now, but that's just a phrase.
Mm.
What else? Yeah, it kind of comes up. When I say it, people are then like, oh, actually, sometimes I can hear a bit of a twang.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not until I kind of say it that they're like, okay, now it makes sense. But when I was in Australia, I remember a few, even our Airbnb host being like, are you from South Africa? And I was like, how on earth have you picked that up?
Yeah, right.
Like, if anywhere, I would have thought I'd sound more British.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very kind of weird accent.
Yeah, my London accent used to come out when I was drinking.
Really?
Yeah, when I was at summer camp, I would try and put on a more, I guess, just a more bland version of the accent because the kids couldn't hear me. But, and they were like, what are you saying? What? And then I'd like drink with the American like counselors like when we were off and they'd be like, your accent is like really kicking
in. It's really strong.
And I'd be like, yeah, yeah. Let's have fun.
The guards have dropped.
How was your time in Africa, like your teenage years and early 20s, I guess?
It was a little bit... So I moved... I remember when my parents said, listen, we're going to move back to Africa, and how do you guys feel? Are you okay with this? And I remember having two requests. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll move if, A, I don't have to go to boarding school, mm-hmm. and B, I can continue to dance, because I was a huge dancer. That was what I wanted mm-hmm. to do. That was my firstborn passion. So I went there. I had to stop dancing, and I voluntarily asked to go to boarding school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'd been there for a couple of months. And it was an international school. And I just remember being so unhappy. Like, I'd never really experienced that type of unhappiness at school. Mm. To the point where, like, just every day I was waking up feeling miserable, anxious. I didn't want to go. So I just thought, you know what? I wasn't happy with the level of education I was getting. I knew I wasn't pushing myself enough. And I also knew that, call it an intuition, but I knew I would have to learn to live without my mum, without getting to the age of 18 and feeling like, shit, yeah. I can't leave home. I can't pursue my career because I don't want to leave my mum. And I know it sounds crazy, but that was a real, like, a very big concern for me. So I kind of, I don't know, I remember saying to my parents, like, this is what I want to do. And my mum, I think she was so shocked, a little bit upset, because she went to boarding school when she was 5, and she just said, it's one thing I'll never push my kids to do, because she hated it. So I went to boarding school. It was one of the toughest things I ever did. I remember just being so homesick for the first like 6 months, and homesickness is, I can't even begin to describe what it feels like. It is the worst feeling you could ever put yourself through. But, oh my God, am I so grateful I did it, because a few years later on the morning of my mum had been diagnosed with cancer when we had literally just moved back to Africa. We'd been there for like 3 weeks. Mm. We weren't even in our house yet. We were living in a guest house waiting for our furniture to arrive, and she got air-vac to South Africa, because Malawi is East Africa and we don't have big hospitals or medical care like that. And I knew it was cancer. And so she was in remission for 4 years. By the time I went to boarding school, she was on chemotherapy, and she was the cancer had started to go, and then it came back again after high school. I think she got re-diagnosed when I was about 19, 18. Mm. Went through, I think it's so hard to remember because it was quite a few times. I think it was the second time that she dropped chemotherapy. She was just like, I cannot do chemo again. She was like, it made her so sick, and it didn't work unless she was on it. So the minute she stopped, it grew back. So then we went the alternative way, and that was really starting to work. I think it just aligned with my mum's values a lot more. My mum was never one to kind of believe in conventional ways of treating the human body, or, you know, even in terms of mindset, and a lot of the mindfulness stuff that I now practice was from my mum.
Yeah.
She went to an amazing clinic in Germany, and that was starting to work. But by that stage, she was stage four.
Okay, yeah.
And so she unfortunately passed away on the morning of my 21st birthday. Mm. So weirdly, I just knew at the age of 15, for some reason, I would have to I'd have to learn to live without my mum.
How was your relationship with your mum growing up?
Oh, we were inseparable. She was the carbon copy. I was exactly like her. I lost my biological dad when I was very young, when I was 3 months old. So I don't really have any memories of him. And it's quite weird because I was listening to something the other day and watching something on the TV, actually, about grief. Oh, it was the Rio Ferdinand, which was really, really interesting. And when they were talking to the kids and comparing, like, is it easier to lose someone that you have next to no memories of, or is it harder to lose someone that you've got a lot of memories with? Uh-huh. And I remember thinking, yeah, I was a bit like, it was definitely harder to lose my mum, for sure. I think we developed a little bit of a reliance on one another. She was the only person that was a constant in my life and someone that we just had this undeniable connection. Because obviously she's my mum, but it went deeper than that. I can't explain it. So that was awful. Losing her was like losing a limb. And I really didn't kind of know what to do with myself afterwards. But yeah, that's when I then, 2 months later, I kind of moved to London. But I'd say all in all, my childhood in Africa was incredible because I feel like I really had to, I learned such invaluable skills. I learned how to be an adult. I learned how to look after myself at the age of, you know, 15, 16, how to live by myself without my parents, how to manage money, all those kind of things. And it really just enables me to kind of spread my wings much more gently after I left high school.
Yeah. Because when you left high school, you decided against college and university, right?
Yeah, I did.
How did that decision come about?
It just felt really natural. I was just, I've always been the type, I was really scared about going to university and college, learning a degree. I feel like this is a bit of a theme. I'm always preempting how I'm going to feel after I do something. Right. So, you know, the whole reason I went to boarding school, I was worried about leaving and not feeling okay. I didn't want to go to university and college because I was worried about leaving and not feeling that I had the practical skills and the confidence. So there was nothing that pulled me towards university. I mean, I guess I could have studied psychology, but I was really kind of desperate to just get my foot in the door and just start so that by the time I was in my mid-30s or late-20s, I'd be, you know, living the life that I've always dreamed of. So it was almost my way of kind of getting that head start.
Because you did a lot of self-development stuff, like super young, right?
Yeah. Again, my mum. That was all my mum. I think she gave me my first self-development book when I was 14, but I only picked it up and actually read it when I was about 15, almost 16. And that was Louise Hay. I always forget what it's called. Like Heal Yourself or Love Yourself, something like that. It's one of her first books. So yeah, for the last 10 years now, I've been actively practicing and learning these invaluable skills that I just wish was taught in schools and was part of our educational system. It's, yeah, integral qualities and techniques and tools that every single person needs to have in their toolkit.
Do you have a favorite self-development book that you've read?
Yes, and it's the one I always tell everyone because it changed my life in a dramatic way. And again, when I think back about it, actually, it was around the time where I really needed this information because it wasn't long after that I lost my mum. So it's like, it's weird actually now when I reflect, I think about all these things that fell into place and yeah, didn't even realize. It's called Letting Go by Dr. David Hawkins.
Okay.
And it's a really amazing book in terms of just putting mindfulness into a really simple format that you can understand and start to apply, but it goes deeper in terms of like understanding where, so the analogy of like holding onto the rope. So, you know, when you're struggling and when we experience things or say someone owes you money and you feel like you've just got to hold on, you've got to force it to make the situation better. He uses this analogy of like letting go of the rope in terms of the harder you hold on to the rope, the more bruises and cuts you get. But actually, if you let go of the rope, you stop the pain altogether, the struggle altogether. Yeah. And it was an amazing introduction into management of my emotions. and also how to just find peace in really difficult situations where all you want to do is force this situation or fix this situation or get the other person to see that you're right and they're wrong. That whole introduction of living a much more peaceful and happy life.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to put that in the show notes for this.
Definitely.
I want to talk about you as a writer.
Oh, okay.
Because we obviously got in touch through email contact.
Yes.
And it was the first thing I kind of processed when I read your email, and I was like, wow, really well written.
Oh.
Like, really liked it. And then obviously I've, you know, been able to see you on Instagram and how you write these beautiful captions. And,
oh, thank you.
Has that been an outlet you've always enjoyed?
Weirdly, I've only come to realise that probably the end of last year. No joke. Literally like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So my first job out of high school, I went straight to Cosmo magazine.
Yeah.
And I was in the beauty department and I was a content writer. And that was the one skill actually that I definitely learned from going to boarding school. My English classes. I remember my English teacher just being, she was batshit crazy, but I feel like all the best English teachers are. She was just phenomenal. She was next level. And I've carried so much of what I learned in those classes into my writing. Mm-hmm. Cosmo was great because it gave me this chance to develop my more creative side of writing.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously I had to stick within a certain tone and a certain voice and brand identity. And then when I started to use it in my own business, I think I took for granted how easily writing comes to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a creative outlet. It's definitely that something that just helps me share a really powerful message. And like I can write them whilst being on the tube. I can write them in under like 5 minutes. And it's something that, yeah, I definitely have definitely taken for granted. But I think the power of language is so important because, you know, whatever your message is, there's always going to be someone that resonates with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I can, building a business can be really tough and you can kind of get caught up in, oh, I don't have enough followers or I don't have very good engagement or this, that, and the other. And that was a cycle I was trapped in for, and I still have to watch.
Yeah.
But I just always try and remind myself that if I can write something so powerful that it helps just one person that day, then I'm satisfied, I'm happy. It's helped one person. That's one more person that can spread it onto someone else and impact, and it becomes this domino effect. So it's almost like one of my tools now that I'm able to use to help other people.
Good.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed writing. That's why it was, I don't know, maybe enjoy is not the right word, but I always had a knack for it early.
Yeah.
When I was like 13, 14, I loved my English teacher and she was, you know, yeah, just great fun.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of learned how to use it as a tool to like express myself.
Definitely.
And everything. So it's whenever I speak to someone that I'm like, I respect in that in that sort of way, it always intrigues me to like how they use it in, you know, just in their life in general.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, it's true. And it's definitely something I'm bringing more into now.
Mm.
But yeah, no, I love it.
Good. So we are currently in the stage of you now moving to England at 21.
Yeah.
How was that experience early on?
If I'm being honest, I was probably trying to run away from a lot of emotions I wasn't ready to deal with.
Mm.
It had been 2 months since my mum had passed, or just under actually.
Yeah.
So I was in serious survival mode. So I arrived. I was staying with my aunt originally. First of all, it was freezing. I don't think I'd ever experienced that type of cold. Or I couldn't remember the last time.
Mm-hmm.
My God, because I arrived in like mid-Jan, like the 10th of January or something.
Whoa.
Oh my God, I was like, what have I done? It was a bit of a culture shock. I was meant to have an internship lined up. That fell through. I was living in the corner of my aunt's living room. And I kind of, it felt like I was almost starting again, really.
Mm.
Everything that I'd built in Cape Town was, you know, I was literally starting again. I didn't know anyone. I didn't have any friends here. I had some family here, but not necessarily in London. So I'd managed to score myself another internship with a fashion stylist. And that was just toxic. She's, I often quote this and stuff, but she's literally what Devil Wears Prada is based on. Uh-huh. One of your stereotypical kind of fashion stylists.
Yeah.
So that ruined my self-confidence even more. Mm. Then I went on to work for another fashion company. But I think in all this time, I was kind of figuring out where I was, what I wanted. I just knew that I really didn't want to work for someone else. And mm-hmm. I was just doing this to get enough experience. I kept saying, I'll start a business when I've got enough experience. I'll do this when I've got enough experience. Mm-hmm. And I was like, nah, I'm done with this. I qualified as a personal stylist. I thought that was the way that was meant to help. I always knew that my mission was to help other women realize that anything is possible, but also just be able to kind of share my own self-confidence journey, because I was riddled with self-doubt, and it was a conscious and constant kind of practice. And I just knew there were things that I could help someone else. If I was feeling like this, there had to be someone else.
Yeah.
But I thought maybe that was through personal styling. So I qualified and started up my business, but things just weren't, something felt like it was missing. It wasn't quite what I wanted. And obviously at the same time of that, now being self-employed, I wasn't sitting in an office mm-hmm. filled with people. So I was struggling to meet people. And it wasn't until I had some friends who came across from Malawi, who finished high school there, and they came across for uni, that I kind of had a bit of a base again. And I moved houses a few times. And then slowly but surely, I kind of found my feet. But it was nice to have that kind of home comfort again. Because London can be so lonely.
100%.
And you'd never guess sometimes, because there are just so many people in London. But I remember just being a bit shocked at, I remember going to Harrods, so on like the first full day here after I'd arrived, my mum was like, okay, let's go to Harrods, let's do a really like fun London day trip. And I remember getting on the tube and just smiling and looking at everyone dead in the eyes, like giving everyone eye contact, probably scaring the shit out of everyone on the tube. And I remember being like, why is no one looking at me? Or like, why is no one saying hello? Or why is no one making eye contact? Why does this feel so uncomfortable? Yeah. And within like a couple of months, that was literally me. I didn't make eye contact with anyone. Look at the floor, you look at the banners above people's heads.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a culture shock. But I think London is one of those places where you've got to experience it at least once in your life. There's so many opportunities here, and it's so accepting of everyone. I really love how diverse and multicultural, and there's this real essence of you can be whoever you want to be and no one can judge.
Yeah.
Which I really loved.
Yeah, because there's, I think what ends up happening is that people have a real sense of purpose with everything they do. So when you're looking at the person on the tube, for me anyway, I'm projecting how I'm thinking in that situation. I'm trying to get somewhere. So like when I was coming to see you, it's like I don't venture on the tube aimlessly, right? It's like, I'm going to here, I'm going to be here. This is the journey I'm planning in my head. So when someone looks at me, I'm a bit like, I don't know what you're doing. Like, it's, you're so lost in, I guess it's like a self-absorbed way in terms of you're concentrating on yourself almost to a fault, but it's this sense of purpose. And that, I love that. That's the main reason I love London. It's that sense of energy. It's like people are all trying to do something.
Yes. Yeah.
And yeah, it can be hectic, and it can be challenging, especially if you can feel very alone in it.
Definitely.
Amongst, you know, millions of people. But that energy, it always feels tangible almost in central London.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I know what you mean, though. That must have been such a weird shock. Like,
yeah, I remember like it just kind of being, I don't know, I could understand that it was a new city, it was a new place, it would take me a while to get used to. But I think I was almost emotionally drained if I look back now, because I've never struggled to kind of put myself out there. And, you know, I had to do the same when I moved to Cape Town. Yeah. And I made most of my friends by going to this fitness club down the road. But there was no part of me that was kind of ready to do that. So right. It was also, you know, also me. I remember like scheduling out my days and trying to like leave. Okay, I'll do grocery shoppings tomorrow, and then I need to go to the post office, so I'll do that the next day. And I used to have to like schedule things to do every day just to get me out of the house, because I was just constantly in my bedroom in a you know, in a shared apartment, trying to set up my business, my online business, and just craving some like human interaction.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I don't blame
you. Oh, it sounds so sad now. I sound like such a loner, but
no, it was true though.
Just, yeah, I think for like 8 months it was like that. But it was, I'm a firm believer in everything happens for a reason. If it was meant to be any other way, and I was meant to have millions of friends at that time, it would have been like that. Yeah. Yeah.
So your friends were coming over from Africa. That kind of helped the transition. Do you remember when it felt like things were starting to turn around and it was starting to become a lot more positive?
I remember, yeah, it was literally when my friends arrived.
Yeah.
And they were all looking for a house together. I was going to move in with them, but it didn't quite work out. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel quite right. But just having them, and then I knew, like, okay, I have someone that I can call, that I can see what they're up to, we can go for coffee. That's all I was really craving, was just, like, literally have someone to call up and meet for a coffee.
Yeah.
And just talk to another human being that's not over FaceTime.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So that definitely, that was like an instant shift. I felt less alone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember how that felt? How did it impact your life in terms of you're setting up this business? Did that sense of having someone that you felt like almost like a support network, do you feel like it ended up affecting the business and everything that you had going on as well?
Definitely. Because I think I'm very much a people person. Like I love my alone time because I have to re-energize as a sensitive, intuitive soul. I love connecting with other people, but it also makes me quite drained.
Yeah.
So it's a fine balance. So having that contact again and having those friendly faces lifted my energy a lot. And I was suddenly more creative. I felt like I didn't have the world on top of my shoulders and I wasn't alone.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely had a massive impact on my business. And then I moved in with one of my best friends who I went to middle school with on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah.
So we moved in together, and that was just so nice to be able to like have someone that would come back home, because obviously I was self-employed. So, and I was working from my house.
Mm-hmm.
So to have someone come back in the evenings was just so nice. I felt like this housewife, like, oh,
no.
Cook you dinner. And I never cooked her dinner, but I would have done. She's a bit of a fussy eater. So that was really nice. So I suddenly felt like, okay, yeah. I can do this. This feels doable. But funny enough, I never, ever considered going back.
Really?
Never. No.
Just felt like it was like a closed door almost?
Yeah, felt like everything that had happened and the way it had all ended was just, it was done.
Yeah.
The door had closed and I just knew that there was something else out there.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
The one thing I find really interesting, and it's something that I've had to, I'm still learning very much every day, is your ability to be, you strike this really, I guess, interesting balance between being very open, being very honest about your journey, but still having like boundaries, like healthy boundaries in terms of how you portray yourself on social media, what parts of your life you choose to, you know, share with people. Has that been like a trial or error process?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I'd say I was a little bit of the other extreme of not sharing enough.
Right.
And I think this is something that I try and talk about quite often now, because the women that I tend to work with are coaches or people that have, you know, this real desire to help other people in whichever way that is.
Mm-hmm.
But when you step into this industry and you now, especially self-development,
mm-hmm.
there is this underlying sense of I can't share how I feel. I can't show any vulnerabilities and weaknesses because someone else is paying me to help them through their own.
Yeah.
So it became this real kind of like mask I felt I had to put on, which never felt right because I always felt inauthentic. Mm-hmm. But I'd say over the last 6 months, it's been a conscious effort to now say, you know what? There are some really toxic sides to doing self-development work. Mm. One of them being not showing and sharing your own vulnerabilities on your journey and viewing that as a weakness. There is this real kind of, I guess you're wanting to do self-development work because you're wanting to work on yourself. You're wanting to feel more confident. You're wanting to, you know, step into your full potential. And sometimes that can come from a real kind of fixing energy and almost a bit of a perfectionism energy.
Yeah.
So it's a really fine balance. It is a really fine balance. But I do stand by the fact that people really relate to humanness. People don't like people who are, or I guess, connect as well with people who have it all and are so perfect and, you know, show this real filtered version, because no one's like that. And everyone knows that. So there is this real power in sharing stories and just being really open and saying, you know what, I don't have my shit figured out all the time. Yes, I help other women feel confident and help them share their gifts, but I'm able to do that because it's a journey that I've been on myself and I'm still continuing to do. So it's definitely been trial and error for sure.
When you were in the early stages of building your business, how does that process look? Because I think people will see your process, like what you've got now. You've got this beautiful website, this fantastic page of like different content. You're really creative in artwork. Thank you. Like all these like things that they look great as a final product, but people don't get to see the nitty gritty of you learning all these processes and how to make it work. How did you find it, I guess, in the early days of building it?
Oh my God. It has been it has been the hardest thing that I've ever had to do. And I put my hand on heart. Yeah. It takes every ounce of willpower, self-belief and momentum to keep you going. I have lost count of the amount of times I've cried and reached the point where I'm like, why am I doing this? Mm. Like, I feel like giving up. And it's only from having a really incredible support system and a part of me that just cannot give up that's kept me going. But I'd say the process looks completely different for different people. I think my business has changed so much over the last couple of years, even within the last 6 months. Yeah. You know, I've really kind of niched down and worked out what my true, you know, the real essence of my message is, and that really is to facilitate healing for the healer, for the person that is ready to empower the people but is lacking that self-confidence to do it and to start this momentum and this movement of healing stories and empowering stories. But I think when you get into this business development, it's also self-development running at the same time. You've almost got these two train tracks that you're trying to keep operating, and sometimes they, you know, crash into each other or they veer off in different ways, and it's like multi-managing. But if I could give one tip, if anyone is building a business or has been building a business, is you've just got to find like, what is your why? In those moments when you feel like giving up and that you feel nothing is moving, just, why am I doing this? Like, what is my big why? And remind yourself of why you started it in the first place. And that was something I always, always go back to. And that really helped me. But yeah, it's a process. You have to be really gentle with yourself. And you can so easily kind of slip into this comparison mode. And I had this massive thing about needing to be further along my journey than I was. And it became this real kind of, I just discredit everything that I'd done up until this point. And it's so unhealthy because it's just, you know, to get from A to B, you have to take every step in between. You can't, you know, jump there, fly there. Otherwise, what's the point of going there?
Yeah. Just chill. Yeah. So interesting. And something that you've mentioned about kind of learning to kind of, I guess, hone in on like people that you want to work with. How early on did you decide that you were going to go like female exclusive with your clients?
So that was something I get asked quite a lot about this, because I have guys who will message and say, listen, your content really resonates. Do you ever work with men? And it does, I get a little bit torn there, but on a strategic level, it's easier to niche.
Mm-hmm.
And for marketing purposes, it's easier to hone in on one message, one person, one problem. On a personal level, I've always felt more comfortable around women.
Sure.
I think that was probably to do with my upbringing and kind of, I guess even, you know, my relationship with my stepdad and everything that stemmed from, I mean, I found out by accident about my stepdad when I was 7. Mm. I had no idea that he wasn't my real dad.
Right.
And I think for me, from that point onwards, was a really turbulent time for me in terms of how I felt in relationships with men, and I didn't trust them, and I felt like there was an ulterior motive all the time. And it's definitely a subconscious block that I have to work through.
Mm.
I think for me, that plays into it a big amount. But also, I guess, being a woman, I kind of understand our journeys a lot more than I would, yeah, you know, potentially with the males. But I mean, as much as I say this, self-confidence is universal. Right. Everything that I share is and can be applied to every person. Mm. I guess I've just had to stay true to what I feel the most comfortable doing and working with, and who I feel like I can facilitate the best transformation for. And that's always been women.
Yeah. Yeah. And.
But no offense to men. You're all great. I love you.
No. I think that the question that comes to my head is, how powerful was it to set that intention when that was established?
Yeah, I guess I've not really thought about it like that. It was a powerful intention.
Mm-hmm.
It was, because I felt like I could do both. I could absolutely, everything that I teach applies to both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've always had to watch that I value my opinion and my reasoning behind everything.
Mm.
And that's always been something I had been very uncomfortable with, and I never wanted to say anything that would rock the boat or potentially upset someone else. So I always used to kind of keep my voice quite, I was never one to really put my hand up and say anything, or I was terrified of saying the wrong thing and offending someone.
Mm.
So I think for me to make that bold decision within my business to say, you know what, I'm going to honor how I feel. I'm going to honor that there is a discomfort there, and I'm okay with that. And until I get to the point where I feel comfortable that I want to work with both men and women, I'm happy to stick working with women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because this journey, I guess, the self-development journey has obviously been 10 years, and I'm not too sure business-wise, but it's irrelevant to the question. What has been, I guess, a profound learning that you've had through either self-development or self-employment that you think has surprised you in terms of it was never something you expected when you first started out on either journey?
That is a good question. I think for me, up until this point, it's been learning to really recognize and understand what you need.
Mm.
And I think on a really kind of like profound level, I think we're so quick to kind of switch off our emotions, switch off our needs, you know, please other people before us, put other people first, listen to other people's opinions and expectations, and allow that to kind of steer your life or business. And the most crucial lesson I have learned so far is that I am in charge, and this is my life, and you know, we're all here to kind of share a very important, I genuinely, hand on heart, believe every single one of us has such a incredible story to share, and we have something, and we've been, the things we've been through and the trials and the crappy stuff we've experienced have all allowed us to pick up these really unique and empowering tools that someone else is going to go through a similar journey, and you know how to get them through that. But I think staying true to what you need in every step of your journey is really, really important. You know, if you don't want to do something, don't do it. If it doesn't feel good, don't do it. Like, I stick by the question. If it feels good, cool, I'm going to do it. If it doesn't feel good, I'm not doing it. And I try and apply that across all areas of my life. And that really helps me set boundaries. It helps me set intentions. It helps me stay true to myself and honor myself on all types of levels. Because I think we carry a lot of shame around who we are. There are parts of us that we, you know, struggle with and that we are learning to kind of love and heal on our own times and on our own terms. But within that, it can be really easy to slip into this. I'm just going to not even pretend it. I'm just going to pretend it's not there. I'm not going to listen to that need because it doesn't fit in with my life. It doesn't fit in with my schedule. It doesn't fit in with my relationship. So we're just going to pretend that's not there. So yeah, I'd say just listen to what you need and do it.
I love it.
Yeah.
One question that's just hit me quite all of a sudden. Because you've spoken about, I guess, the potential for distrust across gender, how's that impacted the relationship you're currently in?
Well, I guess for me, up until this point, so I've been with my boyfriend now almost 3 years.
Right.
Yeah. So this was my first ever healthy relationship. And because of my lack of boundaries, my low self-esteem, my people-pleasing tendencies, my need to give to others and overgive, I would attract one codependent relationship after another. So for anyone that's listening that doesn't know what codependency is, it's kind of that feeling where you don't know where you end and the other person begins. And so there's this real kind of manipulation and energy, but in a very subtle and in a survival way. You don't realize you're doing it, but you lack so much self-value and self-love that the other person is your source and you seek constant validation and approval. So that was a massive thing, and I just constantly remember being so frustrated at myself, like, why can't I just feel confident? Why can't I feel lovable? Why can't someone else see my value? And why don't I feel comfortable around men? Like, what's wrong with me, kind of thing. So it took me years of self-development work again to kind of understand that everything that I was seeking and distrusting in men was just a reflection of what I distrusted in myself. I didn't trust myself to fall in love. I wasn't emotionally available. I think I was so terrified of losing someone that was important to me again after losing my mum, that I definitely built walls. But luckily, by the time I met my now boyfriend, and the reason I met my now boyfriend, Martin, is because I learned to come to, I guess, acceptance of that. I really just thought, you know what? I'm not perfect. I'm never going to be perfect. It's not going to happen. And I don't expect the other person to be perfect. So why do I expect them to think I must be? And that was just like, literally, like I released something in that one moment that I had this breakthrough moment. And we met that evening.
That's so strange.
So it's a real like law of attraction manifestation story I always talk about. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. But there's definitely, it's such a good question. I've not thought about it, but yeah, there's definitely stuff that I still have to work through with learning to trust and feel safe and just less worried about how I come across when I'm with guys. That was definitely always my trigger. Yeah.
Which is so strange because I never got that with us.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I can be really comfortable with certain people and I can feel at ease very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is only the second time we've ever met, so this is crazy. But I guess it's just one of those things. It's kind of you either, some situations are easier for you than others. And energy is energy. If you guys get along and it's fine, then it doesn't really matter what gender you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always feel like I have a softer female, a kind of more feminine energy anyway.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, yeah, so I don't know what it is, but it just intrigued me that you've spoken about, like, yeah, just having, I guess, trust issues is the best way of putting it.
Yeah, I've never really actually like spoken about it. It's not really something that I think lots of. I think it was definitely something when I was a child, like when I was in high school. Because obviously it's a time when you're meant to be like, you know, wanting to date boys and boys are the next cool thing. And I was just like, I'm not interested.
Oh, I was the same.
Were you?
Yeah, not with boys and girls. but no, I wasn't. I was like a super late bloomer in like the love area. Yeah,
so was I.
I just wanted to play football and just do stupid like guy shit. Like yeah. That was just how I always was.
Yeah.
I was like a 13-year-old for like 8 years at that. Like, I was like, can't we just like play football and PlayStation and like just do nothing?
Just live young.
I wanted to talk about your podcast because that's just started, which is super long. Oh, yeah. How did that come about and how have you found it so far?
So that's quite a recent development. It's been something that I've wanted to get into.
Mm-hmm.
So I've started a podcast called Awakened Women. Ooh. With a little slide that in there.
You've got to plug it. You have to plug it 100%.
So I started with one of my really good friends. And she's a women's sales strategist, Sophie Starkey.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually born out of a shared experience that we'd had with a very narcissistic coach that we'd both hired last year.
Ooh.
And that's how we met, actually.
Okay.
And we were just having these amazing conversations about narcissists versus empaths and mm-hmm. the energy exchange and how to, you know, spot warning signs for really covert but incredibly manipulative people.
Mm-hmm.
And we just thought, you know what? Not enough people are talking about this. And as people who, as women, or, I mean, it's called Awaken Women, so it's technically for women. Yeah. But again, it's universal. Not enough women who are intuitive, sensitive, those real nurturers, know that that attraction of a toxic relationship isn't there out of default. And it's not there because it's just happened to you and it's been the way that the land lies. It's this, you know, two energies being attracted to each other for very similar needs but from very different extremes.
Sure.
So the podcast is, that was just the first episode, but the podcast really delves into all levels of spiritual development, self-development. We talk about friendships and communication and how to kind of, it's almost like sitting down with your best girlfriends yeah. and just chatting shit, but shit that's actually really valuable and gives you tools and resources. So we've got two episodes up at the moment. The second one is on manic versus aligned manifestation. That's a real goodie. So if you're into law of attraction and developing that side, it's a really powerful podcast.
That will live in the show notes, everything.
So yes, thank
please
you.
Please check it out. how do you feel when you think about what you've achieved with your coaching work?
Oh, I guess I feel proud. Proud because I'm still here.
Yeah.
And what I've been able to learn from my clients even, and kind of setting out to do something and doing it, regardless of what was thrown my way, I feel really proud of. And I feel like really aligned with my message because it's been my experience firsthand, and like if I can fully step into my full potential and share my gifts confidently, then I feel like I represent what I'm trying to help other people do and other women. So that for me feels a really amazing gift that I feel like I've given myself. And yeah, I think I know that I would have made, you know, my mum was one of my big reasons I started my journey, and everything that I learned really did stem from her. So I feel like, so it's called Megan Nicola. So Nicola was my mum's name.
Ah,
it's my middle name.
Yeah.
But I always said if I start a business, I've got to have some part of my mum in it.
Because
everything I teach has got a small part of my mum. So yeah, I feel like it's almost an ode. What is it? Like an ode to,
yeah.
An ode to my mum, and a gift to myself.
Yeah. I never knew that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I always forget. That's actually not my last name. Megan yeah. Nicholas. Yeah.
Yeah.
My
middle name. Do you allow yourself time to be reflective on your journey up to this point?
I did one of those personality tests again today.
Oh, really?
You know those 16 personalities? Yeah. Yeah. So I got, I'm a campaigner.
Okay.
So it's an ENFP.
Yeah, mine is.
What are you? Yeah, it'd be quite interesting. You're definitely within the
It was
the intuitive.
Oh, that's gonna be level. Super annoying. It was, yeah. It was INFP. I think it was mediator.
Yes. Yeah. So you get mediator, advocate, campaigner, protagonist.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
So I have it somewhere. That's super annoying. But I got mediator. It's like the one that. It was like Shakespeare and Tolkien, but it was super accurate.
Yeah, it's scary accurate, isn't it?
Yeah. I've always had an... because I've done a lot of like self-development stuff like yourself.
Yeah.
You learn... I think self-awareness ends up being so key in it all.
Yes. Yeah. This is a thing. Like, campaigners are very good at reflection, being super aware of their feelings to the point where it can sometimes backfire.
Yeah.
So I've always reflected, but have I actually? I don't know. I'm very good at reflecting. I'm probably not so good at remembering some of the highlights or some of the things and kind of allowing myself to sit in those moments for longer.
Yeah.
Which is a vulnerable share because that's what I teach my clients to do. And I think that's why, going back to that point earlier, it's so important to just be a human and just, you know, allow other people to see that side of you. We're all in, all a work in progress. Mm-hmm. But yeah, today has definitely been a very good reflection exercise.
I'm so glad. One question before we get to these beautiful cards.
Yes.
I also want to... actually, I'm going to mention this now because it's in my head. you have drawn the Guards of Eden artwork.
I have.
Currently have.
Somehow.
I love it.
Oh, good.
It's awesome. How? Good. This is like a new thing, right?
You're
doing the artwork stuff.
It started as... It can be really easy when you're building a business to get bogged down with business stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I was starting to feel like I just needed some sort of creative outlet where I could just zone out and kind of just reignite that creative element again. Obviously, I've got it through my writing, but slightly different. I don't have to think with this.
Yeah.
So I started to sell them a couple of weeks ago, and I think I've sold... about 5 now.
Oh, look at you, Mrs. Commissioned
Artist. Yeah, well, yeah. But 20% is donated to Carers UK, which is quite a charity quite close to my heart because my dad ended up being pretty much a full-time carer for my mum, and that is incredibly draining. And I don't think a lot of people understand what people go through. So it's just a really nice kind of a creative outlet for me, and also... another way of giving back to charity, but also each painting comes with a motivational quote or an empowering quote on it. So it's kind of a multitude of empowering, I guess.
Yeah.
Every time all involved.
Every time I look at it, I love it more and more.
Oh, I'm so glad.
I'll just keep looking back. And I'm like, this is going to look great.
Oh, thank you.
The final question was, what are your hopes for your business and life going forward?
So one of my big aims this year is to go into more high schools and go and spread this message in girls' high schools. So I've got 2 in March. I'm doing one on Women's Day, which I'm really excited about. So that's a huge thing for me. I really want to ramp up the amount of awareness on emotional intelligence, self-confidence, how to deal with self-doubt for, you know, young adults who... you know, when we all look back, we remember how stressful and a little bit overwhelming and terrified of making mistakes. And what if I don't know what I want to do for the rest of my life? And kind of teaching young women that everything happens exactly how it's meant to. Here are some tools that can help you really understand where you're coming from and why you're experiencing the emotions that you are, how to feel more confident in your decision making. And to also just learn to trust the ebb and flow of life.
Yeah.
You don't have to know it all. And you won't ever. Adults don't know it all.
Yeah.
So you're not missing out on anything. And then, yeah, I guess to just work with as many women as possible this year through my 3-month program, to really just start and keep continuing this movement of women openly and confidently sharing their gifts, you know, that over that nurturing side, that ability to connect and empower someone through your own story is really powerful stuff. And I want to help as many women as possible this year to start healing other people.
Yeah, I definitely feel like, I think maybe last year was a massive year. I feel like the world is there's becoming this change from competition, hyper-masculine world, and it is slowly balancing now in terms of more amazing women being like lifted and having those quality traits of collaboration and care and empathy and emotional intelligence. They're starting to become more highly valued in the world of business and everywhere.
Yes, definitely.
So I feel like, you're helping like a something that's flowing in the really good place, you know?
Yeah, it feels like the right time to be, you know, things just feel like they're falling into place for this bigger vision that I have. And it's an exciting place to be.
Oh, great. Right, before we plug things, we are going to preview / I haven't got the tangible £5 note, but we've got
No, this is free, we are about to do
an intuitive reading.
We are.
So can you, whilst this is all going on, explain what an intuitive reading is?
So we're going to do an intuitive card reading. So this is something that I do with new clients of mine, and I've got an angel deck card here. Angel card deck by Doreen Virtue. These are amazing angel cards. Angel cards are one of those things where I feel like whenever you need a little bit of guidance, you've got 1,000 questions in your head and you want some kind of like, what do I need to work on? What do I need to focus on? Angel cards are incredible for that.
Awesome.
So an intuitive reading, these cards just help me bring to the person a message that they need to hear, something that they need to... that they need to hear today. And then normally there'll be other stuff that I can pick up from our interaction, and the cards just help me facilitate. So I shuffle until a card falls out.
All right. And you said that you picked up some stuff. Oh, there we go. You said you picked up some stuff on me when we first met.
I did, yes. Definitely picked up on your feminine energy.
Okay.
You are an incredibly loving person. You can just feel it immediately. I think sometimes there can be a part of you that feels like you live in a shadow of someone else. And that can sometimes feel like you're so proud of that. But at the same time, I want to stand true and be seen for me, who I am. And learning to get more comfortable with standing there.
Does that resonate? It does, yeah.
Okay,
100%.
So you got, which is incredible, you got be honest with yourself. So this kind of confirms the reading. So on the card it says, look into your heart and you will know the truth of the situation. It's safe to admit the truth to yourself, for we will support and guide you through any necessary changes. Lean upon us for courage and the strength to take good care of yourself. Focus only upon your true desires and they'll come to you upon angel's wings. So that to me feels like it's more of a building on what we said and kind of getting comfortable with, I guess, getting in touch with that side of yourself and understanding, okay, what is it that I want to bring forward? What do I want to be known for? If I was sitting on the opposite side of this podcast, what would my answers be? So yeah.
I love it. That's great. Thanks, Meg.
You're welcome. I could go on for ages, but I'm a bit time conscious. So.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And, you know, it's a freebie as well, so don't give away too much. Okay, this is just one of the many things that you do. So this is shameless plug time.
Plug everything
you've got going on, because you are multi-talented and provide many, many different... I guess, avenues for business / help and purpose. So, yeah. Megs, please tell the world where we can find you and also what you're doing, what you're providing service-wise.
Okay, cool. So you can find me on Instagram at Megan Nicola _. So it's a double N. My website is megannicola.co.uk, the same. You can find me on Facebook, Megan Nicola, you get the gist.
Yeah.
The main ways that I work with my clients are either a one-off session. So these are £99, and these are really great for an introduction to the transformations that are possible. So these sessions are really there to kind of help you pinpoint exactly what you're underlying. So if you think of self-doubt and all the things that we struggle with as a spider's web, mm-hmm. my job in that session is to literally find the middle where all the other webs kind of come out from. So we find the core block that you're experiencing and why you're experiencing such levels of self-doubt or self-criticism or imposter syndrome or all of those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But then my main way of working with women is through my slightly longer program. So this is where I work with intuitive, empathic, sensitive women over a period of, it's a minimum of 8 sessions together. So it's normally spread out over 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. And this is where we really delve deep into getting rid of all your emotional wounds, all the healing, self-sabotage, self-criticism, self-judgment, self-doubt, elevating your confidence, working through everything that's kind of, you know, when you just feel like you're getting in your own way,
yeah.
that is what I help you undo. And we learn much more gentle but empowering ways to continue your evolvement. And how to then facilitate and step into your full potential as a natural born healer mm-hmm. with an empowering story.
I love
it. So, yeah.
Okay, awesome. I'm going to plug in the show notes. You're going to be able to see, this is for the listeners, but you're going to be able to see the book that you recommended, your podcast, your website, your Instagram.
Perfect.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool.
Fantastic. Right, Megs, before I let you go.
Yeah.
Final 4 questions. There is a slight change from season 2, but these are 4 questions that everyone will answer. They're more, I guess, deeper questions, more grandioso in terms of what life is. But I'll ask you the first one, which is, what's one thing in your life you're proud of overall?
Probably moving to London and setting up this business. Mm. Yeah. In a nutshell, those are my biggest achievements ever.
All right, cool. Yeah. So your second question, what's your biggest personal struggle that many people may not know about?
That would definitely be my assertiveness. I have to actively practice being more assertive. Mm-hmm. I think I can sometimes be a little bit too laid back and a bit go with the flow. And sometimes that can cause me to kind of, I guess, not disempower myself, but in a situation where I'm with a slightly more stronger energy or someone that's more assertive, I have to really kind of push myself to step into that assertiveness and that strength in my voice.
I love how your whole posture changed when you answered
that. Did it?
Just like, yeah, so I need to be more assertive.
That's one of my techniques.
Oh, I love it. It's the, I always forget her name. TED Talk.
Yes. Oh, the blonde power lady. Yeah. The power pose.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's going to annoy me.
Oh, is it Carol's? Sarah?
Is it Cody? Last name?
Right, hang on.
Yeah, let's find this out on my...
TEDx.
It's like the power...
Yeah. Amy Cuddy.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, nah. I love that.
That's so funny. I didn't even realise I was doing that.
That's straight on your puss. Right, and question 3. What are 3 personality traits / characteristics that you would say you have built your life upon up to this point?
Honesty, integrity, and kindness.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah, I think those are my 3.
I agree. The last question. Actually, I kept telling people I feel bad about asking it, but it is actually my favourite question. I'm going to really embrace that this year. I love this question. Many years into the future, your time as Megan Airy / Megan Nicola is coming to an end. The person closest to you only has one sentence to describe you and your time here on Earth. What would you hope that would be?
I would hope that they would say Meg's a loud woman all over the world to recognize what they were possible of achieving if they believed in themselves.
I love it.
That would be, yeah.
Oh, I love it, Meg.
That would be my thing.
Thank you so much for your time.
No worries. Thank you for everything. Having me.
Guys, please check out Meg's. And for the dude listeners, the content, it resonates with me. Yeah, I love it. So
it's universal.
Yeah. So please go support Meg's in whatever way that you feel that you can. And just celebrate the phenomenal woman that you are.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for having me. No. I don't think I've ever sat down and just shared my whole life story. So it's been a real, real experience. I've loved it. So thank you.
That means a lot. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right, guys. Goodbye.